Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Jan Desper Peters, and I am your host of VTST Services Podcast, Meeting You Where You Are. I know that we are in some troubling times, but I also know that there is hope. I know that you've been getting a lot of information, some of it good, some of it not so good, but at the podcast, Meeting You Where You Are, we work very, very hard to make sure that you have guests that are going to give it to you just like it is. And so today I'm excited. I'm excited to have two of my good friends on. One of them is Dr. Melissa Clark, who is a board certified emergency medicine physician. And then my other very good friend, Cheryl Maxwell. Cheryl is a licensed professional counselor, but she also runs and founded her own nonprofit, Carolyn Ann Foundation, and I'll have her talk to you about that. But Cheryl was also diagnosed with COVID-19. And as a seasoned woman over the age of 60, she was especially concerned because she was in one of those high-risk groups. And so I'll let Cheryl share her story and her journey. So without further ado, let's talk to Dr. Melissa Clark and Dr. Cheryl Maxwell.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hey. I gave you all a brief introduction during my introduction. And I also wanted to say thank you for coming back because the technologically challenged Jan Desper Peters, the recording didn't take place last time. And so people didn't get to hear your wonderful information. And I have so much to ask you, even from that time to this, that, you know, we could probably do this every week. I know Dr. Clark does do a weekly information.
I've heard.
That's right. That's
who you are. Good morning, Dr. Clark.
Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
Wonderful. And even if I miss it, you know what? It's so important to me, Melissa, that I have put it on my calendar so I can
Wow, I'm honored.
That time out. Yeah.
That's how great the information is. And so you all that are listening today, you are in for a treat with Dr. Melissa Clark and Ms. Cheryl Maxwell. So let me give you a more formal introduction of them. Okay. So Dr. Melissa Clark attended Harvard University, and she also is a board-certified emergency medicine physician and population health expert. And many people may not know what population health expert is, so Dr. Clark will explain that to us. And she looks young and energetic and vibrant. You would not believe that she's been doing this for over 20 years. Dr. Clark has also served as senior medical director at Aetna, owned Active Health Management. And she also has been an assistant dean at the Howard University College of Medicine. In addition to all of that, Dr. Clark also is an author. She wrote a book called Excuse Me, Doctor, I've Got What? Because she felt it was important as patients that we know how to advocate for our care when we're talking to people in the medical profession. Her work really centers around healthcare reform, health empowerment, and integrated care. My other guest is Ms. Cheryl Maxwell, who is a very dear friend of mine. Cheryl is a licensed professional counselor. She also is the referral and information specialist at a nonprofit, the Black Mental Health Alliance in Baltimore. So if you ever need a referral to a mental health specialist, Cheryl Maxwell is your lady. You call her up, and she almost works as a personal concierge to make sure that you get the information that you need. Cheryl also has a very interesting background, and I'll have her share a little bit about that, in that she founded a nonprofit organization and is the executive director of Carolyn Ann Foundation. And Carolyn Ann was Cheryl's sister. And I'll have her share a little bit about her sister and the foundation. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us, Jan.
Good morning.
This is so wonderful. This is a great morning. I'm grateful. I'm grateful that you're here, and I'm grateful for the wonderful information that you're going to share. First and foremost, I'd like to know, how are you all doing? I mean, we've been, I guess, we're in the beginning of July. We've been in quarantine, or should have been. Some people aren't doing anything. They just not socially distancing. They're not wearing masks. They just in complete violation. I was in the store a couple of days ago, and this man refused to put on a mask. They asked him to put on a mask. They told him they would not give, they would not allow him to purchase anything without the mask. And he just went into a tirade. I was almost a little nervous because he seemed a little unhinged because they asked him to put on a mask. And so I know Dr. Clark is going to talk to us about that and why that's important. But you know, my personal thought is that we may have certain rights as Americans and as individuals.
As consumers.
That you don't have the right to infect me.
Right.
You know what? If you want to be in a space where, you know, you jeopardize your own life, then yes, you have the right to.
Right.
You have the right to jeopardize my life. Right. And so that's my position. I mean, my husband thinks I'm, you know, over the top. If I go in a store and I see somebody with a mask and without a mask, I am going to ask management, is that a policy, you know, whatever, because I don't have to shop there. That's the one good thing about America is free enterprise. There are other places to go. And if you cannot make me feel comfortable and safe in a space where I'm spending my money, then I need to go someplace else. So with that being said, ladies, I'm off my soapbox now. How are you doing? How are you doing, Dr. Clark?
I'm doing well. I mean, I think, you know, there is something to this introvert extrovert thing. And as an introvert, I've been at peace, not going anywhere. You know, we've been cooking at home. We have not eaten out for 3 months now. Other than food that we prepared, we have a friend who's Ethiopian. She prepared a meal for us, and that's it. So, and then as far as, you know, just focusing on getting the information out there, that has, you know, caused me to spend a lot of time because there's so much information, so much misinformation, and I've really been dedicated to making sure that, especially our community has the right information. So I've been spending a lot of time on that in addition to my regular 9-to-5. So I've actually been probably busier since this pandemic started than before.
I've experienced the same thing with regard to being busier because I don't have to do that commute and time that I spend to actually think. That was one of the things that I've always said is that if I just had a moment to sit and think, you know, and kind of do a mapping, a plan, that would, I think, make my life much simpler and easier. So there have been some definite bonuses in the pandemic of just sheltering in place and quarantining. So I want to have you just talk a little bit about your podcast and why you're doing it. And what are some of the myths that you found? Because I know that people also get to ask you questions. So you get a lot of questions on your podcast. And I know that one of the first questions, maybe a few months ago, and hopefully this has been debunked, is that Black people can't get the virus. And we have seen that the numbers disproportionately are not in our favor as it relates to deaths and hospitalizations. And infected cases. And so I'd like for you to share a little bit about that, the disproportion ratio as it relates to that.
So one of the things I do, I work for a company called 3M Health Information Systems. And so ever since late February, I've been poring over the data that's come out of other countries. And I saw pretty early that people that have diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, kidney disease, lung disease, autoimmune disease, those individuals were at higher risk for getting COVID-19. And so one day I was listening to one of the White House press briefings, and they were only mainly talking about older people. Elderly people get it, older people get it. And I just got incensed. And so I wrote a Facebook post about the fact that no, these are the facts, this is who's getting it. And that post got shared over 120 times. Wow. And I have to give credit to my husband, Wayne Bruce. He said, well, you know, maybe you should do a Facebook Live, because, you know, if it's getting shared this much, you know, people might want to hear from you directly. So I started doing it, and it's become very popular because it gives people a chance to clarify the things that they're hearing, all the misinformation. And you're right. One of the very first things was that Black people don't get coronavirus. And then shortly thereafter, Idris Elba came out. And I think after that, people were like, oh, wow, Idris can get it? Right. Oh, maybe I need to focus on this. And then actually a journalist who listens to my show, Deborah Barry, wrote an article in USA Today, and she quoted me. And this was before the statistics started to come in about the disproportionate effects on communities of color. So she quoted me, and she went to some other sources, and she basically said, look, you know, because communities of color have these disproportionate, these conditions disproportionately that set you up for COVID-19, this is the possible outcome. We all need to be paying attention to this. And of course, that, you know, unfortunately has come true. We've seen, you know, rates of coronavirus in terms of hospitalizations be up to four times that of whites in the Hispanic community. We've seen it in the African-American community. We've seen the death rate in the African-American community be 2.6 times that of whites. If individuals died at the same rate as white people were dying, 13,000 more Black people would be alive today. I mean, it's staggering to think about. And so, yeah, that's why I've been so passionate about saying, hey, y'all, let's wake up. Let's take this seriously. And unfortunately, it's not enough just for Black people to take it seriously. Everybody has to take it seriously, just like you said with the mask, because we are the frontline workers. So if somebody of another background, another race comes into the grocery store while we're the checkout person and interacts with us, we might get it. And if it's a young African-American person, they might not even know they get it. They go home, they hug their parents, they hug their grandparents, and then it's on and popping in terms of spread. So yeah, we really need to take this seriously. Everybody needs to take it seriously.
Exactly. I want to ask you another question based on your conversation just now, and then pop over to Cheryl. And that is when you said the young person may not know they have it, because then we enter a world of maybe being asymptomatic. And we're talking about celebrities that have said that they have been tested positive for COVID-19. D.L. Hughley, who I know had some other underlying conditions, I believe he's diabetic.
Correct.
So did not have any symptoms, according to him. He just thought it was exhaustion. He passed out on a stage while he was performing. And lo and behold, he was diagnosed with COVID-19. So I would like for you to just kind of share with us and clear up what it means to be asymptomatic and why that is also so important to know.
Yeah. So there are actually two modes of what I call silent spread, because silent spread, I think, is easier for people to intuitively understand than asymptomatic. So silent spread means you have the coronavirus, it's in your body, it's, you know, multiplying inside your body to the point where you have enough of it that you could pass it on to other people. With most viruses, when that happens, you feel symptoms, you feel sick, you feel feverish, you have body aches, you have a cough. Well, with coronavirus, apparently in many people, up to 40% of people who get the infection, they don't have symptoms. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a phase called the pre-symptomatic phase, which means that from the time that you're exposed to it to the time you get symptoms, maybe up to 14 days. Mm. So therefore, you are, again, walking around, interacting with people, potentially spreading the virus, and you don't know it, and they don't know it because you look fine. And so with D.L. Hughley, he has diabetes, and diabetes in particular makes you sometimes not feel symptoms like other people would. So, for example, diabetics can have heart attacks and not even know it. So my concern when he passed out on stage, knowing that he had diabetes and knowing that he subsequently tested positive for coronavirus, was number one, it could have been dehydration, which is most likely what it was, but it also too could have been a silent heart attack. Or number three, it also could have been a blood clot that broke off from his leg and went to his lung. And that's called a pulmonary embolus. And it happens more often in COVID-19 because it promotes blood clotting in your body. So all those things could cause somebody with COVID-19 to pass out. And I hope that he was thoroughly checked out at the hospital before he was released. And I hope that he, you know, continues to have a speedy recovery without any more symptoms, because I think passing out was a symptom.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's a great transition to Cheryl, because as I mentioned in her bio, Cheryl actually was tested positive for COVID-19. And I'd like for Cheryl to share her journey, because I know that part of that kind of ties into the Excuse Me, Doctor, I Have What book, because Cheryl really had to advocate for her care, because even in trying to get tested initially, she could not be tested. And so after Cheryl kind of gives her story, Dr. Clark, I'd like to transition back to the whole testing piece and vaccination and what that means for us. All right, Cheryl.
Just to say a quick piece about the Carolyn Ann Foundation and mental health, and heaven knows, in addition to the advocacy that's very necessary, this all impacts our mental health, whether you are a survivor of COVID-19, whether you have a family member, but to get to my experience, let me say, it started out with me being certain that what I was experiencing could be related to COVID-19. But when I consulted with my primary care physician, I was led to believe, well, I wasn't right. I was convinced that rather than it being COVID-19 and rather than me insisting on being tested for it, that it was the flu and that she had a remedy for that. So I was given a prescription. That prescription was a type of steroid. Unfortunately, in my case, it accelerated the symptoms rather than alleviating them. So it was a matter of me being admitted to the emergency room on two different occasions. Finally, the third visit to the hospital, I was tested. Well, here's something too, because I stressed with my primary care physician that in addition to me feeling what I was experiencing was related, I told her I am a first responder, I work in an emergency room, and here is where, Dr. Clark, your book and advocating is so very important. These are fine professionals, and we know it, but they too have stressors in that they become overwhelmed, and we understand that. But by the same token, listening is such an important skill, whether you're a medical professional or not. But particularly in the case where it is your health, it is your life at stake, and you know that someone's not on the same page with you, you have to not be intimidated by it. You must speak up, and you must have them speak to you until there is clarity and they acknowledge that you acknowledge what they have been telling you. That's very important.
That's absolutely important. And so, Cheryl, you were in the hospital for how many days?
When I was finally admitted, I was in the hospital for 7 days and in total isolation. It was quite an experience, and I must thank the professionals who tended me for the most part, after we had gotten to the point where they heard what I was saying, and by now the test results that they administered to me were catching up and telling the same story. They were then convinced, all right, we've got to admit her, take her up and let's get started. And I say this because communication sometimes can be a barrier. These are wonderful professionals, but it's true. They are our medical, there's a lot of diversity. People from all around the world are attending to us, but not all the time. Is that language barrier something that is not, it can be difficult to manage. So communication is important. And there's not a problem. My team was they were very responsive when I told them, I'm sorry, but we didn't quite I couldn't quite understand what they were saying. And I don't think that person I just spoke to understood me. They would find someone on the team would find someone else who would come in, and they did a better job. We did a better job of being able to talk with one another. But that's only because that advocating for yourself. And in the isolation experience where family members can't be there with you, it's very important that you speak up for yourself. Read those documents. I know they're giving you papers. I've got a stack, but read. Make certain that you're educating yourself so that you can better educate the persons who are tending to you. And it's a team effort, and they appreciate it. I found my experience to be it was a very good experience once we all got on the same page. But that took quite a lot of time, and I was very sick in the course of it.
So, Cheryl, you've given us some great nuggets in relationship to, first of all, knowing your own body and knowing that there's something wrong.
Yes.
You were able to go to your physician. The other piece is that you were able to kind of share, maybe even do your own tracing as it related to where you may have become infected. Because not only do you work in an emergency room, you also shared with me that you run a support group of types.
That's right. That's true.
And there were people
yes, you're right.
in the support group who had tested positive.
That's right. So and we had one death. You're right. You're right.
You were able to trace back to that. That right. You were once admitted, you were able to. And some people are so sick they can't advocate for themselves, and they don't have a family member there. And right. So they're in a quandary as it relates to that. But yeah. If you're able to, how
you've
important.
You've got to do the best you can.
Right. Are sharing information with you at a level that you can, and not when I say comprehend, I don't mean because you're not able to understand, but you're not able to understand maybe because of a language barrier.
That's right. That's important.
Even if it's repetitive, to make sure that you understand what's happening with you, what kind of care you're receiving, what kind of medication you're getting.
Right.
You have knowledge about that. That's
right, right, right. And if you are sick and you are alone, and yes, it may be difficult. It will be difficult, but that's especially when that your ability, you grabbing the energy from wherever you can get it, so that you can communicate. If you can't do it for yourself in that circumstance, no one can do it for you. Not that the professionals will not do what they can, of course, to attend to you, but they need your help, if at all you can give it.
So, Dr. Clark, I would like to kind of have you again debunk some of the myths or provide true and accurate information. I know that medicine is a practice also. And so with this COVID-19 in the beginnings, they weren't exactly sure what, if anything, they could give a patient as far as, you know, a drug or medication was concerned. And so, you know, I think they did find out that the hydrochloroquine was not at all. I've seen studies and read information around actually having a patient on their back is not the best position for someone that has COVID-19 and is moving toward recovery. And so if you would share some of those things so that if anyone that's listening is diagnosed and receives a positive test result and unfortunately have to be in a hospital setting, that they can then know some of these things to maybe share with their medical team.
Sure. Well, first of all, let me say I am so heartened to know that Cheryl is better and that she came through that experience.
Thank you, Melissa.
And so sorry that you had to unfortunately, that you went through that experience. And yes, advocacy is most important. That's why I wrote the book, Excuse Me, Doctor, I've Got What? It's really all about knowing your body, being able to take practice self-care and what that all entails. But then when you have to interact with the medical system, how to advocate for yourself effectively. There's even a chapter called Surviving a Hospital Stay. So to Jan's point regarding, you know, there's misinformation, but then there's also been the learning curve that doctors have had to undergo. So it's not necessarily that there was misinformation. It's just like, you know, this has been a experiential learning for doctors. Doctors have never encountered this coronavirus and COVID-19 before. So they've been learning as different people have come in with different symptoms at different points in the illness and had to figure out, well, what does work for this? So it's been a learning curve. So initially, one of the things was everybody got put on a ventilator. Well, they soon discovered that ventilators, because of the way that COVID-19 affects your lungs, sometimes ventilators are not even effective in pumping air into your lungs, into your system. So one technique is now putting people on their stomach, because that actually helps your lungs expand and get more air in, and sometimes can prevent people from having to go on a ventilator. Then there are other things like BiPAP or CPAP, which are, you might know somebody with sleep apnea that sleeps with a mask at night. So using those machines can help prevent people from having to take the next step of going on the ventilator. That can actually get them over the hump until their body starts to heal and their lungs start to heal so that their oxygen exchange in their lungs gets better. Lying on your stomach or a BiPAP machine can help you not have to get on a ventilator. Some people do eventually have to get on it. The other thing you mentioned, Cheryl, was that you got prescribed a steroid. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a study that's come out recently with a medicine called dexamethasone, which is a steroid, which has been shown to help people with COVID-19. But the key is the timing of when it's given. Mm-hmm. So if it's given too early, as in your case, it can make things worse. Mm-hmm. Because what it does is it decreases inflammation. People may not understand that inflammation is a crucial part of your body's immune response to it's actually sending the soldiers out to kill the virus when it first comes in. Mm-hmm. What happens in COVID-19 is after that initial wave of soldiers, inflammation goes out to kill the virus, your body continues to have this powerful response even after the virus is gone, and it actually ends up doing more damage to your body. It causes your blood vessels to swell and blood clots to form. It causes organ damage in your body. So that's the stage at which you want to give steroids, because you then want to say, hey, immune response, you could chill out now. Where the threat is gone. So when you get the steroids too early, it can allow the virus actually to multiply and grow in your body.
That's what I felt, yes. Right. I developed syncope too. And when you were saying that the entertainer was, he passed out at the podium, I had that happen to me several times, and I had to make them listen to me to understand that I've got these variety of things going on, but they wouldn't be considered the normal symptoms.
Right? And that's the other thing that we've learned is there's so many potential presentations of coronavirus, the way that it shows up in people. Right. And syncope means fainting or passing out. That's one of them. And then lastly, there's a medicine called remdesivir, which is an antiviral. You might have heard Dr. Fauci talk about it. It has had some success in treating individuals with coronavirus. And so if you have no reasons to not take it, because it doesn't work for everybody, it can have side effects, then, you know, remdesivir is something you should be on. And I know I said lastly, but I thought of one more thing, and that's blood thinners. So one of the things that people were dying from pretty early on, very consistently, was, I mentioned this by the third time I've mentioned, is blood clots, because they can form anywhere in your body. They can manifest as a heart attack, a pulmonary embolus that I mentioned before in your lungs. It can manifest as a stroke. You might have heard of the young man on Broadway, the entertainer, who had to have his leg amputated because blood clots were cutting off the blood supply to his leg. All that is a result of COVID-19. So now doctors have figured out that if they start blood thinners immediately when the person gets to the hospital, that that improves the person's outcomes and makes them less likely to end up in the ICU and less likely to die. So I would say those are four things to definitely keep in mind. And please, with the steroids, don't try to take them at home, because some people take steroids anyway for asthma. So if you think you have COVID-19, don't give yourself steroids, because like I said, the timing is really what's key. And doctors kind of know when the inflammation, they actually measure blood tests to figure out, okay, when should we give the steroids?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dr. Clark, for that. I want to transition, because I could keep you all day, but I know that I'm with you all. But I wanted to talk a little bit about testing and some absurd thinking from some of the national leadership around, well, if we stop testing, then we won't have as many cases, which is, again,
ridiculous.
That's almost like, well, if you don't do regular breast exams, then there'll never be any more breast cancer.
Right. And don't ever brush your teeth. You'll keep them forever.
Right. You know, we're not going to spend any more time. But just really want to hear what you're hearing or what your experience is with regard to person's ability now to be tested. Do you only get tested if you say, I'm experiencing some symptom? Like you said earlier, there's a range of symptoms. So it could be that, not necessarily that I'm having a hard time breathing or I'm coughing or I have a fever, but also that, you know, I've lost my sense of taste.
Or smell,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some of the more common symptoms, and like I said, it's not an exhaustive list,
right,
include fever, cough, runny nose, headache, chest pain, stomach pain, diarrhea, passing out, loss of taste or smell or both. So it can be a very long list. And in addition to having symptoms, you could also have been exposed to someone and not have symptoms yet. Mm-hmm. So those are both reasons to get tested. And it's important to know that the test, unfortunately, is not 100% reliable. It's best to get tested 5 to 8 days after you've been exposed. Mm. So if you get exposed to somebody today, mm-hmm. don't run out and get a test today, because it takes the virus a while to multiply in your body so that it can be detected. And the more virus there is, the more likely the test is to detect it. And then as far as the availability of testing, you know, one of the factors as to why there's been disproportionate effects in the African-American community is because we've had testing deserts. So if you live in the black section of town or you live in a black county, there were fewer testing sites available to you. Many states and local health departments have really worked hard to try to remedy that, but now the federal government is pulling funding for
supporting
testing.
Right, yes.
And so, and we're seeing that at the height of the epidemic, of the pandemic, in places like Texas. Mm-hmm. So it's really a shame. I would say if you feel like you've been exposed or you have symptoms, you should go get tested, because that's the only way that we can truly understand what is the extent of spread in the community. And most places, if you need to find someplace to get tested, you can look on your local health department's website. Sometimes the CVS in your community will have testing. A lot of times urgent cares in your community will have testing. So I would encourage you to look into one of any of those options for testing, but it is absolutely false that taking away testing will make cases go down. It'll make the case count go down.
Right.
It won't make the cases go away. Right. And it's estimated that we have 7 to 10 times more cases
than what they're reporting
than what are being reported because of the under testing.
Let me just add this suggestion too, because the health department in your county, for instance, in Prince George's County, there is a testing site. You can even walk up, you can drive in, the tests are free. And this site is by Prince George's County Community Hospital, but also the MVA, the Motor Vehicle Administration locations were supposed to also be converted to testing sites. So you might want to find, as Dr. Clark suggested, a website to verify locations, but that's an alternative site as well.
I appreciate that, Cheryl, that information that you're giving. I would just like to offer just piggyback on something you said. Definitely contact your local health department, because I can't imagine that a local health department anywhere in this country is not giving out information about COVID-19 and testing. The second one is that we continue to just, you know, identify, maybe, I don't know if this is in every area, but in we all live in Maryland. In this area, you can call 311. I believe in the District of Columbia is 211. So it's a non-emergency number, but they have information about situations like COVID-19. And so you may apply that as an access point as well. The other thing that I want to just ask Dr. Clark to maybe give some closing thoughts on is that we have experienced many protests. I talked to Dr. Clark offline because she's my go-to medical expert. I have my personal medical expert on speed dial. And one time when we were talking, she was very concerned that when the protests started to spike, that the numbers also were going to spike.
Right.
So we see a lot of people out even during protests with no mask. When you're in a protest and you're in a crowd, like the one behind me, there is no really space to physically distance. And I know that all of these things are important, and I just like to ask Dr. Clark to share how we can stay safe. I know that people, I don't think it's made it to the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic mental health professionals use as it relates to making a diagnosis for their patient. But I believe there is a thing called quarantine fatigue. And so people are tired of being in the house and they want to go outside. They want to go to parks. They want to go to beaches. But there is a socially responsible way to do that. And so I'd like Dr. Clark to share her thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, with the protests, I've been saying have a protest plan and a post-protest plan. The protest plan is pack your backpack with wipes, hand sanitizer, water to drink, but also in case you get sprayed with pepper spray or tear gas, you can use that to water down your eyes. And then a mask. And you must wear your mask and practice distancing if possible. Now, the post-protest plan is when you come home, you can't go hug your loved ones at home because you've been exposed. And you really need to quarantine yourself away from your family or wear a mask around them for 14 days. I mean, that's the only way that if you've been exposed, you cannot infect those around you. And remember, like I said, the test is not reliable for 5 to 8 days. So until you get tested and then another 3 days until the test comes back, that's up to 11 days. So you know, get a test, definitely get tested, but know that you need to be isolated from your family or wear a mask around them until you get your test results back. So that's the protest plan and the post-protest plan. And don't go to the protest if you don't feel well. That's the other thing.
Please.
The good thing about what we're seeing now, though, thank God, is that the protests have not caused a rise in cases. And that's a beautiful thing. And I think it's because they're outdoors. Being outdoors is protective. I think enough people wore masks. And I think people were moving around in the crowd. They were marching. They were going someplace. So they weren't necessarily next to people that they didn't know for an extended period of time, which are really the cases, the instances in which the virus spreads the most, when you're indoors and when you're next to people for a prolonged period of time. So now that we're coming up on 4th of July and you want to go out and socialize, you got to do it responsibly. If possible, socialize at home. That's the best place to socialize. If you're going to have something in your backyard, make sure that there's seating areas that are far enough apart, 6 feet away from each other. I've seen people do tailgates where they back the cars up in a circle and you stay at your car. And you got your own little food that you're eating out the back of your trunk, but you're able to talk to other people in the circle of cars. So there are a lot of creative ways to do it, but stay 6 feet or more away from each other, wear your mask. That's the only way to ensure that we're not spreading the coronavirus, and do it outdoors.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. Cheryl, I'm going to give you just a couple of seconds to share a little bit more about Carolyn Ann. That's actually how Cheryl and I met, because I was running a nonprofit and Cheryl was about to start her nonprofit, and we agreed that we were kindred spirits. Cheryl helped me with my nonprofit. I helped her with hers.
Yes, it's been a
phenomenal work. And so I just want you all to share, and give the folks your website so they can see.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, let's start off with the website. That's www.carolynann, and that's A-N-N-E, foundation.net. Right now, the foundation, we are working with children. Turner Elementary School in Southeast Washington. And we have had a few of the children, they have the capability to do the virtual activities that we've been doing with them. Mental health, as I said, is being impacted by all that we're encountering right now, whether we're talking about economics, whether we're talking about environment, whether we're talking about community, employment, all of that we are experiencing, not to mention also the financial stressors. So I wanted to add to what Dr. Clark was saying in terms of how important it is for self-care. And I hope, Jan, this in some way answers the question that you're asking me, because Carolyn Ann, in keeping the children, we're doing exercising virtually, would you imagine? My only sadness about this is that not enough of our children have the equipment necessary so we can engage them. But for those who are able to, we are finding that it's a wonderful experience. So I, even with the children, mental health and being able to exercise, yes, we can't do the hugs now in the way that we used to, but you can still have that closeness at a distance. You get out. I find walking around lakes to be so refreshing now. And being in the sunlight. So these things are important in working with our children. Carolyn Ann knows that they're wonderfully made. That's our program with them. And all of these elements go into making our children. They can transition this change that's happening much like we can too, and we can grasp that this is a time to be creative and to look on the positives. It's not going to be the way it used to be, but then that's a good thing when you're able to change, when change is happening. So Carolyn Ann tells us, through the work that we do, mental health and taking care of ourselves is the best thing we can do in taking care of others.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. I appreciate
it. Welcome.
And I want to encourage you.
I appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate you so much. Mr. Clark, so much. I appreciate your husband, Wayne Bruce, my very dear friend. And I want to encourage you to go to Amazon.com and purchase Dr. Melissa Clark's book. Excuse me, doctor, I have what? And you go to Facebook Live on Monday nights at 9 p.m. And she has also some extraordinary guests. Right. So you get to hear Dr. Clark. You get to hear her extraordinary guests. The one thing I like about the generosity of her spirit is that it's free.
Don't forget WHUR, please, because I've heard you on the radio.
I have a YouTube channel. Please subscribe to it. It's Dr. Dr. Melissa Clark. You can find me there. And all the videos that I've done, including ones on mental health, COVID survivors, etc., are all there. And thank you, Cheryl. I'm on the Russ Parr Morning Show Tuesday mornings at 7:45, and also on WHUR 6:22 p.m. every Monday. So, yes, I'm there as well.
Busy. Yes. So taking care of us.
taking care of our community.
Yes, that's true.
Walking the walk. And so we appreciate that. So a song came to mind when I was thinking about that. I don't know if anybody remembers Carol Burnett. Maybe I'm dating myself. But at the show, I'm so glad we had this time together. Just get started. And before we know it, there comes a time we have to say,
so long. Good luck. I love you, girls.
All right. Take care.
Thank you,
Jane. Okay. Bye, Cheryl.
Thank you. Oh, and I'm going to do something about my roving camera. Please. I'm calling my brother as soon as we hang up.
What's that camera doing? I don't know.
Man. Okay, guys.
Please subscribe to the podcast on Podomatic and SoundCloud and the Apple Podcast app. And I'm asking you please to subscribe, because when we drop the new podcast, you get a notification. People always ask me, well, Jan, when are you going to put out a new podcast? And I say, please subscribe, because the service will tell you when a new podcast come out. So thank you all, and goodbye.
You're welcome. Goodbye. Bye.